Hello, bonjour, and welcome back to Canuck as a Slur, a podcast that I swear finally is about the Richard Riot. I am Kelly, and with me again for the last time ever, having fulfilled all of his community service requirements by being here for these three episodes, from the Lions Led by Donkeys podcast, it's Joe. How are you doing today?
Hey, you know, it's really nice that this time I was only sentenced to 3 hours of community service yeah. instead of the like 500 that I got when I was a kid.
Well, it was a much more gentle crime you did this time, and we won't talk about what it was, but...
Yeah, that's why I can't leave the Netherlands. It's why I had to move legally to The Hague, you know?
Yeah. So as I was saying, we are finally getting to the Richard Riot, the thing that we promised to talk about at the beginning, but that's the guarantee of this show. You get a 2-to-1 ratio of historical context to events.
I know how that is.
So just to refresh everyone, we've talked about why Maurice Richard was an important hockey player to hockey nerds. We talked about why Maurice Richard was an important cultural figure to people in Quebec. And we talked about why the team, the Habs, or the Les Canadiens de Montréal, were or are an important cultural figure in Quebec as well. So this has led us, if you'll recall, to 1955, specifically March 13th, 1955. At this point, the Rocket has already had an illustrious career, now in its 13th season. He's led the Habs to 3 Stanley Cups. He's already claimed the all-time records for goals and points, and he's led the league in goals 4 times. At this moment, the team is tied for first place with, and they're finally here, the Detroit Red Wings.
Woo! Way before they were very, very disappointing.
This was a moment of real good for them as well, because this is now into the Gordie Howe era, so...
Yes, the man who established the Gordie Howe hat trick of was a goal, assist, and a fight a game, something he only ever did twice himself.
Yeah, that was going to be my fun fact. memory serves, the person with the most ever Gordie Howe hat tricks, as far as we know, is Brendan Shanahan.
That makes a fair amount of sense. People don't really remember Shanny as being a guy who liked to drop his gloves a lot, but he did a lot.
They're tied for first place with the Red Wings, and the Habs haven't finished at the top of the regular season standing since 1947. Meanwhile, Richard is leading the league in scoring, 38 goals and 36 assists for 74 points. If he holds on for 4 more games, he will finally win the regular season scoring title. Gordie Howe, who'd won the last 4 straight, was well behind him. But as much as Maurice was known for his goal-scoring prowess, he was also known for his temper, something his opponents both feared and used against him. He even admitted himself that he had an anger problem. SB Nation, which has a really good long-form story in the Richard Riot, summarizes his rap sheet like this.
On one occasion, he knocked out New York Rangers tough guy Bob Killer Dill twice in the same game.
Yeah.
In 1947, he broke his stick over the head of another Ranger, Bill Jizda. A month later, he clubbed the Maple Leafs' Bill Enzinicki in the Stanley Cup Finals. Opponents frequently antagonize Richard because they could count on him retaliating, and they would rather see him in the penalty box than on the ice. By 1955, he had become one of the game's most penalized players. During 18 seasons in total, he amassed 1,285 penalty minutes. That is incredible.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons, like the guy getting knocked unconscious twice in the same game.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, obviously, going after like the top scorer has always been, well, not so much anymore, but it's been a tactic in hockey for a very long time, hence why enforcers exist to keep these guys off the back of your star. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of another guy who was so good at scoring, but also racking up penalty minutes, because that kind of guy doesn't really exist anymore.
I don't have one right off the top of my head. I'm sure there's a really good example I'm forgetting.
Yeah, I mean, Brendan Shanahan certainly comes to mind because he was dirty as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that as someone who loves Brendan Shanahan, obviously, when we rented him to win multiple Stanley Cups in Detroit.
Yeah.
I mean, he was well known for being a dirty fuck. So was Brett Hull. There's kind of a whole generation of remarkably dirty players, but I don't even know if you want to call it being dirty when it was just allowed. Like, the game was fucking brutal. And this is only in the 90s.
Yes.
And meanwhile, in the 40s, you get a guy getting knocked out twice in the same game.
Yeah, like current players, like you definitely get players who are painted with being dirty. Like, I think people have criticized Leon Draisaitl in this way. And I would admit, as an Oilers fan, that's kind of fair. Like, he can be in sure. those areas. I think Gabriel Landeskog was a good example of somebody who's pretty dirty and like the captain.
Yeah.
Not necessarily their top scorer.
Yeah. And I mean, effectively retired as well, by all accounts. Like, I don't think he's ever coming back due to whatever the fuck is going on with him.
That's fair. I've actually paid so little attention the last few years. So,
I mean, the Avs won a cup, so they can't really be too, they can't complain too much about that.
A quick update on this because I was out of the loop. Basically, when Gabriel Landeskog won the Stanley Cup in 2022, he did it like so many others before him, playing through serious injury. He fucked up the cartilage in at least one of his knees so badly that he missed the entirety of the next two full seasons, and by the time we recorded this episode at the beginning of March, the majority of a third regular season, hence popular understanding that he was simply never going to play again. Since then, Landeskog came back for a conditioning stint in the minors before returning to the Colorado Avalanche for the first round of the 2025 playoffs, where they were eliminated in 7 games. However, he did manage to score in Game 4, meaning he had 2 successive NHL goals tallied 1,041 days apart. I guess it's all a testament to some combination of personal perseverance, impressive reconstructive surgery and rehabilitation techniques, and the sheer male hubris of thinking it's a good idea to push your joints to such extremes. The proportions of that combination will be left as an exercise for the listener.
There's a lot of dirty players floating around, though. I do think they do a better chance of kind of policing. Like, Alexander Ovechkin used to have a one hell of a reputation for being dirty as fuck, and it was earned. Sidney Crosby had a reputation for being dirty, but in a different way of kind of like flopping and getting away with it because the NHL wanted to protect him so much.
Yeah, I think honestly the most analogous player I could think of for somebody who's renowned for toughness as well as scoring in this way would be Gordie Howe. Like, that's who else comes to mind, probably.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they just don't make them. Like, I can't be the guy like, well, back in my day, because I wasn't fucking alive.
Yeah.
But like, the hockey players of that era were just like forged in a factory somewhere. They don't exist. And that goes for pretty much all sports. Like, I mean, yeah. Basketball used to be crazy physical. Football used to just murder people. I mean, it still does, but it just takes longer. And hockey players would stop the puck with their face. And that how the game was played.
Yeah, I mean, everything you're talking about will come up too, and I'm interested to circle back to this later in terms of this, like, the back in my day, the old time hockey, because there's, I think, a lot to be said on that subject. But I also want to say the shout out to Bob Dill here as a guy who has a name that is like, it's very clear how to pronounce it.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Killer Dill. And I should say, I am not reminiscing in how brutal hockey used to be. It's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
And hockey should be safer. Fighting should be banned. Things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Why the fuck are we still doing this?
It's really stupid. Like, it's funny, but
it's fucking pointless.
Yeah. I mean, I say this as a person who's like, if a fight breaks out, I'm like, I want to watch. But I also know, like, this is bad for your brain. This shouldn't be happening.
Yeah. It's just like watching the golden era of the Detroit Red Wings. Those dudes are just giving each other fucking TBIs and CTE left, right, and center. I'm never going to say I wasn't entertained because I am a consumer of sports. Of course, you're entertained by that. It's human crash test derby. But like, at the same time, you don't need to be doing that.
Yeah, those three letters I want everyone to keep in mind as we read the next few paragraphs. TBI.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And yeah, so you mentioned like having to go after a star player. From my really cursory, because I was like, who the fuck is Bob Dill? His job, as far as I understand, on the Rangers at least, especially as a basement-dwelling team, was to just basically go after Richard and shut him down and be like he's like a Tom Wilson here almost, right?
Another famously dirty player.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, enforcers became a thing for a reason. I mean, not the only thing they did was punch each other in the head, but like a lot of them, their whole job was like, go down the ice and put that dude the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't really exist much anymore, but you know, they definitely used to have a role.
Yeah, that's why he gets the very unsubtle nickname of Killer.
Yeah, he did a lot to earn that, I assume.
Yeah, well, and on the subject, I don't think Bob Dill was necessarily talented, but if you want to talk about that gray, the weird Venn diagram of like talent and being a dickhead, a fun piece of Bob Dill trivia is that he was played in the Maurice Richard biopic by Sean Avery.
Oh, well, that's a perfect one for one. Famous piece of shit.
Yeah.
I will say, like, you know, Sean Avery, for as dumb as he was on the ice, you know, that's whatever. Everything he did was within the rules until they made the literal Sean Avery rule.
Yeah.
But like, as a person, garbage. Just an absolute piece of shit, which most enforcers were not, I will say. Like, I met Bob Probert when I was a kid. Bob Probert was a drinking buddy of my dad. Very nice man. Alcoholic, and it eventually killed him, much like my father. But like, yeah, an absolute lunatic on the ice, but honestly as cuddly as a fucking teddy bear off the ice.
Yeah. Well, and also, what was it, 5 DUIs in a couple of years?
Yeah. I mean, that he was just assimilating to the Midwest. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Well, I can't say any more about Sean Avery without spoiling a future episode. So,
oh, what a piece of shit that guy is. I fucking hate him.
You're going to love that series. Oh, yeah. Another cast member in that movie, guy who really you wouldn't expect to come up in this series twice, Mike Ricci.
Huh.
There's your little connection.
You know, I never saw him as someone who would get into acting.
In that movie, which I also want to rewatch at some point for the show, they had a whole bunch of NHL players play a lot of these major figures in the movie. So, like, Sean Avery was the only one who had really an acting career, but, like, they have Vincent LeCavalier, Jean Béliveau, and Ian LaPerriere plays someone and stuff like that. So there's, like, 8 hockey players in that movie. Because they wanted actors who could skate.
And saying Avery had an acting career is a bit of a stretch, but yeah, I mean, he had an acting career compared to everyone else you just named.
He was trying to be an actor. Nobody else here was trying to be an actor.
Yeah, the problem with Sean Avery was everybody knew he was a dickhead before he started acting.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, actors become a dickhead down the line, like after they've, you know, after they have a career. You don't get into the front door already being a dickhead.
Well, you know, someone's got to innovate.
Yeah, disrupting the dickhead space.
Not content to get into it with other players, Bouchard had also assaulted a referee in a hotel lobby in 1951. He had also combined the two flavors just a few months earlier this same season, in December of 1954, by clubbing a Toronto player in the face with his stick, then slapping the linesman in the face with a glove when he tried to intervene.
What, like a fucking duel?
Yes, like an empty glove.
Was he going to demand satisfaction?
I think so.
It's a real Alberta move, not a French Canada move.
You know what? Valid. I'll take that.
The only thing, I don't know much about Canada as someone from Michigan, but I do know Alberta is pretty much Texas. So yes. I assume the same rules apply.
No, Alberta being the worst has already been a theme in a few episodes. So not beating the allegations. Yeah, like, and a lot of these old stories, you will get slightly different variations in different accounts. And I think some of that has to do with how not perfectly it was captured. Like, they didn't have a high-speed camera pointed at everything all the time like they do now.
Right. Like, the game looks like it goes in slow motion if you ever get a chance to, like, I'm sure you have, but listeners, if you watch, like, old-timey hockey, the game looks like it's going at, like, 0.5 speed.
Yeah.
Or, like, minus 0.5 speed. A lot of that has to do with, like, athleticism not really existing yet and science not really being involved in making ice skates, but also just because they played much slower.
Yeah, one of my favorite anecdotes from, so around the time that people in hockey thought, hey, what if people were also athletic?
Yeah.
Was, and this was also with Montreal, where they were saying, okay, we're going to start doing dry land training. Like, we are actually going to do some kind of physical exercise off of the ice. And Guy Lafleur, who was like toward the end of his career at that point, was like, fuck this. So they were going around the track and he walked around in loafers smoking.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, at this point, being athletic in professional hockey is just being the only guy on the team who doesn't smoke and drink 7 days out of the week.
Yeah.
Like, damn, that dude is fucking ripped. He takes this seriously.
But yeah, it seems to be generally described as he slaps him with a glove, and at least a couple of the spots will describe it as like a limp glove. So I do want to believe he did it with that stance, like that dueling,
fuck yeah,
satisfaction demanding stance.
I don't know how to say I demand satisfaction in French, but that's what I'm assuming was yelled.
It's like je demande la satisfaction or something. So it's not that far off. One of the sources that I used listed even more incidents in the early 50s, including swinging a stick at a spectator, kicking an opponent in the chest, and punching a cop.
Fuck yeah.
But I wasn't able to verify these.
He's just hockey Ty Cobb, minus the racism, as far as I'm concerned.
Hopefully, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to beat Ty Cobb on the racism stuff. So, like, I'm still comfortable saying he's hockey Ty Cobb, minus the racism.
And I do want to be fair, like, the other incidents, you can verify, there's news reports. These ones were in one book, and so I'm very skeptical of those claims, because I'm like, if I can't find it in a newspaper archive or Wikipedia or anywhere other than your book, I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, famously, I compared him to Ty Cobb because he beat the shit out of a fan one time, like leapt into the stands and started throwing haymakers. And the guy ended up having no hands.
Wait, like he attacked a guy who already had no hands?
Yes. Yeah, he was beating up a handicapped man. And someone said,
no.
Mr. Cobb, he has no hands. And Ty Cobb said, quote, I don't give a fuck if the son of a bitch has no feet. and just continued beating the shit out of him.
Oh, no.
Fucking Ty Cobb, man. That's like, you don't hear much about hockey players really going at spectators. That sticks out to me.
Other than Sean Avery. But we won't want to spoil our any future episodes.
Fair
so.
Enough, yeah.
People should also bear in mind, this was a six-team league, and this contest that we're talking about against Boston on March 13th was the 14th meeting between them that year. The second in 2 days as they played a home-and-home series back-to-back. So it was, I think, Saturday, Sunday, back-to-back, one city and the other.
And they had to play on the weekends because everybody else had to go to their day jobs on Monday.
But suffice to say, tensions had certainly built up. Early in this game, the Bruins' Hal Lako, so this is a name we're going to be talking about a lot, was penalized for charging Richard. Richard got away with tripping him in the second period. And in the third, things come to a boil, and one way or another, Lako's stick hits Richard in the head, cutting his scalp and driving him into a rage.
I could see why he'd be mad, yeah.
You'd be mad, and like, he was cut, and he had to, you know, he had to get it stitched, and he's got like the bandage on it after. Like, that for sure happened.
And could you imagine how bad team doctors were back then? Like, now, every team has like a full medical staff, but back then, it's probably just like, no, that's Jim. He volunteers on the weekend. He learned how to do this from a book.
Yeah, in our recent episode on Bret Hart's pitch for Don Cherry as the greatest Canadian, there's this old...
Yeah, Bret Hart the wrestler?
Yeah, so...
Okay, that hurts even more. He's supposed to be a good guy, but apparently he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, Bret Hart is a land of contrast. That's what we landed on.
I mean, he gets a lot of sympathy because his brother died on TV.
Yeah.
To be completely honest.
So he kind of identifies as a conservative when he's talking, when he's singing the praises of Don Cherry for this CBC show they did. But he's also like, when you consider how low the bar is now for, you know, self-described conservatives, there's stuff on his Instagram where he's doing events for like National Truth and Reconciliation Day. And he also got given a formal indigenous name in a ceremony by like a tribal elder.
Did he do it in like a best out of 2-3 falls match or something like that? But if I win, you have to give me a native name. If I lose, you get to be Bret Hart.
Yeah. Oh, yes, sir. In this video, when on the subject of team doctors, there's this old clip of Don Cherry talking about his time in the AHL, and he's talking about like getting cut across the lip and having the doctor come and stitch his mouth with a giant needle.
That's a shame. His mouth didn't remain stitched for the rest of his life.
Yeah. And he's bragging. He's like, well, and he didn't use no gloves, and he was blowing smoke in my face the whole time, and I wouldn't change a thing. And it's like, yep.
It's a shame you didn't catch like MRSA. I fucking hate Don Cherry.
Oh yeah. Well, this is why we've done like 8 hours of content on Don Cherry already. So,
well, one day the content fountain will stop and the world will be a better place because he'll be dead.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So what happens next in this game, I compared 5 different accounts of what happened next. And also on top of that, the Wikipedia summary, which also draws from other sources that I didn't go through. And no one's version is really exactly the same for that. A lot of that reason, I think, is, as we said, we're so used to having everything captured and we can just review the footage.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, imagine looking at like trying to get a sports update based on like multiple eyewitnesses rather than a decent video.
Yeah. Well, and all of your, I think, eyewitness accounts that are closest to it, so many of them are from players, and you know they're going to give you a skewed account.
Yeah. I mean, generally, at least on the side of their guy, unless they're, you know, the yield Sean Avery's like, nah, fuck him too, even though he's on my team.
Yeah. So yeah, no one's version is exactly the same. There's no existing footage of the incident. I was trying to look into whether these games would have been televised, and this is the era where the CBC was starting to televise games. Because it specifically mentioned like Toronto and Montreal. So I think it was that it was in their home arena.
And even if it was televised, it may have not even been recorded.
Exactly. Yeah. Because like a lot of the old footage is just written over because people didn't care about archiving. But I think if there was footage of this event, they would have kept it.
Oh, for sure. Even if like hockey was kind of like a weekend beer league back then, this would have been remarkable.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me that it may have been on TV, but also wasn't recorded. That was really common up until, honestly, quite recently. Within like my lifetime, things started being constantly recorded, even if they were live local news or whatever.
That's also a good point. Yeah. In any case, we just don't have the footage now. The general narrative, and this was definitely shaped by the league's meeting with Richard, Lehko, the officials, and other team representatives 3 days later, was that Richard had hit Lehko in the back with his stick and, like, clipped his glasses.
The dude was playing in glasses?
Yeah. That's another great old-time thing.
Fuck, that rules. I mean, imagine what a contact lens would have looked like in 1955 or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's somehow worse when you get hit in the eye.
Shit, it's just a lens of glass that you shove under your eyelids.
So Lehko's hit him in the head for sure with a stick. He's probably grazed Lehko in the head with his stick. And then Richard breaks free from the linesman who's trying to restrain him and breaks a different stick over Lehko's body.
So he had to pick up a second stick to break it again.
Yes. Yeah, so depending whose account you go off of, he may have broken away again and used a third stick on Lehko at some point.
He had to get a hat trick.
That is the NHL's official version, like that I think the Clarence Campbell, the president, says. Back then, the format of Department of Player Safety videos was like announcing this shit on the radio.
Department of Player Safety. We kept the stick breaking over the head to an all-time low of only 3 in a game.
Yeah. So we don't know for sure whether that third stick part is true. Again, it's just a chaotic melee.
A third stick has hit the building.
Yeah, a third stick has hit Hal Lehko.
I mean, it's fucking crazy that back then this wasn't considered a crime. I mean, to be okay, fair enough. Maybe it will be. That's just assault with a deadly weapon at some point, right?
Well, I mean, hold that thought.
Getting into Donald Brashear territory.
Well, for sure. Now, what definitely happened was that the last time that Richard breaks free of the linesman, Cliff Thompson, he turns around and drops him. Just absolutely decks the linesman. Possibly twice.
This is a ground and pound situation or a two-piece?
Honestly, the accounts vary enough that one is like, oh yeah, he wrestled himself away. And another is like, oh, one of his teammates pulled the linesman off of him. And then like in the movie, he's being portrayed as like, they're both standing up the whole time and he spins around. So I'm repeating myself, but you can't get the exact blow by blow. We just won't know.
Man, hockey fights back then are so much different. They come with so many like unwritten rules these days where it's like if a lineman so much as like grazes you with a fingertip, it's time to stop fighting and everybody stops and goes home.
Yeah.
Back then it's like, no, we'll fuck you up too. Yeah. I'll hit you with a goddamn stick. Get me a fourth one.
Yep. In SB Nation's version, they describe it as Richard believed Thompson, the linesman, who was a former Bruin, had been specifically holding him back so Lehko could punch him. And that's also kind of how it's portrayed in this biopic, where he's being held and he's actively being punched by Lehko. It's just so hard to say for sure. I mean, like, I'm only going to give so much credence to this sports blog that isn't naming its exact sources, but...
I know refs were much different back then, but it seems unlikely that one of them got, like, Richard in, like, the hucklebuck to hold his arm back so the other dude could blast him in the face and all of his teammates were just letting it happen. It seems very unlikely to me.
Yeah, for sure. Like, the Occam's razor here is you have 4 on-ice officials... Two of them whose job is actually to hold guys back when they're fighting, and two of them is more to stand back and make the appropriate penalty call, and you have 10 skaters brawling. You, as a linesman, you're just trying to pull somebody away from somebody.
Yeah, and it's not like hockey players back then gave a shit if they punched a ref. They'd be fined, what, like 15 cents and call it a day? If they're holding back your star player so they get rocked in the face by somebody on their team, someone is going to fuck that ref up.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is not the first or last time an official gets hit, but it's definitely one of the most notable. It's also muddied a bit by the Habs coach Dick Irvin, who was present in this disciplinary meeting after. He accused the officials of lying in their accounts to Clarence Campbell, the league president. And for another, the league has never released the meeting minutes, so even how that was discussed in that room, we don't know.
God, the fucking NHL is treating refs like they're local cops.
Yeah.
I feared for my life and the life of my fellow referees.
Yeah.
So I shot Richard's dog.
An impressive shot when Richard's dog is all the way up in the press box.
Yeah, I mean, like, cops can't hit anything other than things they're not supposed to. So
yeah. He's coming right at me. Like.
Yeah, exactly.
In some versions, Richard told Campbell in the meeting that he had thought Thompson was one of the Bruins because he was in a daze after being struck in the head.
Fair enough. I mean, he did get rocked a good one, you know, concussions certainly exist. They're not wearing helmets.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I think, just me personally, I think this is really under-discussed in almost every version of this I've seen. And it's so under-discussed in so many let's just say sports stories, the impact of TBIs.
They're not good. I can tell you from firsthand experience. This isn't even the first time they've impacted a hockey game. Like, it wasn't that long ago. Well, a couple seasons ago now, where a dude got fucking rocked, got up, and just reacted by hitting someone and happened to be a referee. And like, the guy was very clearly swaying back. Like, he didn't like cold cock him in or anything, but he threw a check for sure.
Yeah, you're talking about Dennis Weidman, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, the dude was very clearly concussed.
Yes. I've argued with people about this all the time where they're like, oh, yeah, of course he got his bell rung, but you would know that's a linesman. And I'm like, see his head hit the plexiglass. You see him unable to get up, and he is days skating to the bench and basically doesn't react to a lineman being in front of him until he's an inch away and throws his stick up. Yeah. And people will be like, oh, yeah, he knew exactly what he was doing. And it drives me fucking insane.
Absolutely not. Like, I've had more concussions than I legitimately can count, which, in case you're wondering, yes, it is not healthy. You shouldn't do that. But like, no matter how many you've had, no matter how, like, you know, quote unquote, got your bell rung, like you're talking like a fucking elementary football coach in 1995, that shit fucks you up. When you get up, you do not know where you are. You might have a firm grasp on like what activity you're doing. Some people react incredibly violently, especially if they've been knocked unconscious. Even if you've been knocked mostly unconscious, like I used to be in the military, and after that I was a paramedic. And one of the things that you learn is after someone suffered a concussion, like, you know, if it's a soldier and they have a weapon, you take it away from them. Because when they wake up, you have no idea how they're going to react.
Yes.
Similarly to firefighters, to take anything that could be used as a weapon away from them, or police officers, if they were like knocked unconscious in a car accident or something. Like, people can just react like a fucking cornered animal.
And the confusion too, because so the last time I can't diagnose somebody with a concussion, that wasn't in my scope, but I was doing medical standby at a rodeo and a barrel race kind of.
That's like a concussion factory. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was a fucking 16-year-old, I think, who got absolutely whipped off his horse because he's doing the bronc riding. And he gets up, and like, I didn't see the actual thing when it happened. Someone showed me on a phone video after he got destroyed, and he comes up to our treatment center after, and he's saying like, I think I need to come over here because I'm told that I was thrown from my horse. I don't remember any of it. The last thing I remember is like wrapping up my arms before going out the gate with the horse.
Oh God, that's a bad one.
Right. But also, he then proceeds to just loop back. He doesn't remember that he has come up to us to talk to us. So he keeps starting his story over from the beginning. He is the most concussed person I've ever seen. Like,
yeah,
that's how confused you can be. It's scary.
Yeah, you can be in a completely different fucking planet. Like, I mean, I've been knocked out both in the military, doing Muay Thai, and one time doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. You know, they say, like, you know, you're grappling with ghosts because, like, you can get knocked unconscious, and it might look like a fencing response, which is, for people who aren't aware, it's like when your arms lock out in front of you, which is, long story short, never a good sign. But you can be concussed, not have a fencing response, but your body just keeps doing things. And a lot of time, if you're knocked out fighting or grappling, your body will just continue swinging and trying to grapple, despite the fact your brain is in a different fucking postcode.
Yeah.
Like, you have no idea where you are.
Yeah. And like, we're also talking about this in a 1955 context, when even in the 2020s, these are still underdiagnosed. Because I had...
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. I'll try to keep this short, but I was working in like a nursing station in a remote reservation in Alberta. That was one of my previous jobs. And we had somebody who just like face planted off an ATV, cut her whole face open, and she's got every possible symptom, right? Like, she's photosensitive, her eyes are like swollen shut, massive headache, vomiting, everything.
Oh yeah.
So what happens from these little remote communities is like, we fly you into the nearest city, if you want to call it that, to the next hospital, which it even itself is generous. So we had this person come back and like need a dressing change. And so I was talking to her about, okay, so like when you were at the hospital, like, okay, probably I'm just doing kind of like the basic notes and assessment. And like, yeah, they would have told you that, you know, you had a concussion, right? And she's like, no. And I was like, did they use the word concussion at any point when you were there? She's like, no.
Yeah, honestly, I wish I could say I was surprised. Yeah. I was sparring not too long ago. And obviously in sparring, you generally don't go very hard, but there's someone training for a fight. So you go a little bit harder. And accidents can happen. Sometimes, you know, a fist hits you in the jaw at just the right angle while you're turning or something, and you just go out, right? And that's what happened to this guy. Just crumpled, hit the ground. By the time his ass hit the ground, he was awake again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was up and walking around. And everybody thought it was fine, which is not unsurprising in combat sports.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, me and the owner, who is a Dutch paramedic, was like, oh, no, this guy needs to sit the fuck down. Like, he's out. Like, he needs to go to the hospital. And he's like, no, I'm fine. This happens all the time. Like, well, it fucking shouldn't. this fucking shouldn't happen. We were able to talk him out of it by, like, the guy who owned the place, like, you are not fighting. Like, I'm not letting you. If you step on those pads again, I will kick you out.
Yeah. And if the audience wants more on traumatic brain injuries and their effects, they can go check out, I think it's episode 1.2 of this show, where we talked about that in the Don Cherry context, of course, but...
Or the entire back catalog of my podcast.
Yeah. Another aspect that comes up there too is the way that recurring concussions, you're more susceptible to them the more of them you have.
Yeah, that's how they discovered CTE.
Yeah.
You know, the chronic aspect of it, these minor lesions and bruises over time, you know, you end up with some of these guys, I'm sure some of these old school hockey dudes, by the time they died, many of whom died very early,
mm-hmm.
either from, you know, mysterious illnesses or alcoholism, which is another telltale sign of untreated TBI from all the after effects of it. Like, I'm sure their brains looked like they were 40 years older than they should have been.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like Chris Benoit, effectively.
Well, and the most telling example we talked about was Eric Lindros and how he was basically getting concussions from like basic body contact at the end of his career.
Yeah, I mean, he turned into like a man made out of glass. There was also the enforcer he played for the New York Rangers. Cannot remember his name. Bugard.
Yeah, we talked about Bugard too, yeah. Those three players who all died in the summer of 2011.
Yeah, horrible post-concussion problems.
And so tying that back to Maurice Richard, in this on-ice incident, it was very likely he had been concussed as he went to the hospital the next day complaining of dizziness and an upset stomach.
Oh, surprise.
And of course, at this time, a lot of these reports are like, well, it's good news. He went for an x-ray and they found nothing wrong. And it's like, well, yeah, because a concussion doesn't show up in the fucking x-ray.
I'm sure like the doctors back then was like, hey, have you tried smoking 3 cigarettes and drinking whiskey?
Yeah, and he probably did.
It's like, you did? Kidding me? That's my fucking breakfast.
Yeah. So when Richard left the ice, his face, which, as I said, needed stitches, was described as, quote, looking like a smashed tomato, end quote.
Oh, that's not a good sign.
No.
Your face generally shouldn't look that way.
Yeah. This almost certain TBI, I would say, would not have been his first TBI. There's a very famous photograph of Maurice shaking hands with Bruins goaltender Sugar Jim Henry, taken after the Rocket had scored the game winner in a deciding Game 7 to advance the team to the Stanley Cup Finals. I believe this is 1952.
And he is fucked.
They're both fucked because the goalie has black eyes and a broken nose from taking a puck to the face. Probably has a TBI, honestly.
Everybody on that team, everyone on that particular piece of ice that night is not entirely sure what province of Canada they're in.
No, absolutely.
Also, I love how back then the ice was just like dark and it made it look like they were playing in a parking lot.
Yeah, there's something about the lighting in the old photographs because it happens a lot. I know we've discussed it before where it just looks like they're playing at night in the dark outside with no audience.
It's the National Nighttime Pond Hockey League.
Yes. For those just listening, in this photo, you can see that Richard is still bleeding from a bandage above his eyes as in this game, back in the 52, he was sent face first into a Bruins knee and knocked the fuck out earlier in the game and then was described as losing consciousness again as the team doctor was stitching him up. And then he returned to that game and had to ask, he gets to the bench and he asks his line mate, hey, what is the score and how much time is left? Because my eyes can't focus on the clock right now.
And somehow he manages to do something that requires so much hand-eye coordination, like handling and shooting a puck afterwards.
Yeah.
While ice skating.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I don't need my brain to do that anymore. It can just kind of go on its like gross motor skills and play a decent game of hockey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and he goes back and he scores the game winner to advance into the playoffs.
All right. I'm just saying that goalie should probably lose his fucking job. Like goalies back then weren't very good. But if you get scored on by a dude whose brain has just been turned into mashed potatoes, you probably need to hit the fucking pine, bro.
Maybe. But again, mitigating factor, I think he also might have been concussed. So who fucking knows?
It's true.
Richard apparently told reporters he could recall the goal, but on the subject of the hit said, quote, "I don't remember a thing. Everything went black. I didn't know where I was," end quote.
Oh, that's not good.
No.
It's not fucking good.
So for hockey fans, or at least people who caught our episode on Don Cherry and head injuries, if this concussed goal scoring sounds a lot like Paul Kariya's infamous story from 2003, yeah, it should.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. Poor Paul Kariya.
Off the floor, on the board, yep.
Fuck, there's another career absolutely ruined by concussions. And life. Not fuck a career, it's a life ruined by untreated concussions.
He was very mad at the league for a long time and refused to participate in any NHL events.
Yeah, don't fucking blame him. I'm surprised Eric Lindros doesn't feel the same way, to be completely honest.
Yeah, Lindros has this really, like, even when he's talking about Scott Stevens hitting him, he does this, like, well, yeah, I did have my head down. And I'm like, oh, fuck, that makes me so mad.
Yeah, yeah, like, and Scott Stevens, you know, arguably you could say he was dirty, but at the same time, what he did back then was completely illegal because the league is fucking insane.
Yeah. And by the same token, you already predicted this, but if the concussed official punching situation sounds a lot like Dennis Weidman's 2016 incident in which he bowled over the linesman, which he also claimed he thought was an opposing player after having his head smashed into the glass, yeah, it should.
Yeah, and Dennis Weidman got a shit rocked quite a few times because he was, you know, a defenseman that with quite a few seasons under his belt.
Mm-hmm.
In an era where getting your shit rocked was quite common. And the concussion protocol was kind of mostly vibes.
Yep. 10% more vibes than it is today.
Yeah.
So, to your other question, Boston police wanted to arrest Richard, but this again varies by accounts, but either the coach and or the players, I'm going to say probably both, barred the dressing room door, and eventually the Bruins management convinced the police to let the league handle the matter itself.
That is not surprising. Like, no. There's been a lot of incidents on the ice and things that have happened in other sports that 100% would have constituted a crime in any other fucking context. And like, you know, in combat sports, we always have this thing where we say, like, you know, what makes what we do not assault is consent. And consent is within the bounds of the rules of the sport that we're playing, we're competing at. And the second you step outside of that, you are just committing assault, which is famously why, like, Marty McSorley was charged for nearly killing Donald Brashear. I can't think of another time where that happened, to be honest.
Of somebody being charged with assault?
Yeah. I mean, like, the Malice in the Palace comes to mind, but it's because they were throwing fucking haymakers at civilians. They weren't even, they weren't just punching each other.
I know it's been brought up. People have talked about certain things maybe should be assault. One of the main examples that comes to mind is Todd Bertuzzi sucker punching Steve Moore and breaking his neck.
Yeah, that absolutely should have been assault, by all accounts.
I think he got questioned. I think he, like, the police got involved, I want to say. That's going from memory.
They did, and nothing came of it, which I strongly disagree with, even though Bertuzzi ended up playing in the Wings afterwards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Fuck him.
Yeah.
He nearly killed that man. Like for people who are listening who aren't hockey fans, how hockey fights work, because Bertuzzi was you could call him an enforcer, a pest, whatever.
An agitator.
Yeah, an agitator. He also had some hands on him, so, like, he was a little bit more skilled than that. But, like, the way hockey fights work is through consent. Like, if you're an enforcer or not, you chase after someone and you goad them into fighting you by saying, let's fucking do this. Like, verbally, you can see hockey players do this. Moore refused to fight Bertuzzi, which meant by the rules, the unwritten and written rules of hockey, there should have been no fight.
Yeah.
And instead, Bertuzzi grabbed him by the back of the fucking pads and drove his skull into the ice and then began to punch him in the back of the head, breaking his neck.
There were also, like, 8 200-pound people piling on top of him as he did it, which didn't help.
Yeah, that definitely made things worse. But, like, the fault of that is 100% on Bertuzzi, and he should have been charged with assault more than, like, McSorley.
Yeah.
Because at least McSorley hit him in the helmet, you know?
It's an incredible example of just affluent white guy privilege here, too, that the cops did say, we're going to arrest this guy for assault. And you can just say, no, thank you, cops, please leave. And they go, yeah, all right.
Yeah, it's like some old timey shit as well. You know, like, a whole bunch of hockey players just stand in the way and the cops are like, well, I guess we're going to go home.
Yep. So the next day, terrific headline in the Boston newspaper.
Richard goes insane.
Richard goes insane. All caps. Terrific. And then the subheading, Clubs Laco, Slugs Lineman, and Gory Tantrum. Really good.
That fucking rules. Like, and earned, I must say. Even if he is concussed the whole time, He earned that.
Yeah, like there's got to be an amount to which you went into, even whenever your first head injury was, like you were probably a hothead to start. And that probably speaks to some other aspect of your personality.
Yeah, I mean, there is stories of people with multiple concussions having their personality be, you know, completely changed from it.
Mm-hmm.
And there also is the fact that, you know, the saying is punch drunk at this point. You know, he's gotten his shit rocked to the point he's just kind of reacting. Also, it's fucking hockey in the, what, 50s? Everybody is like, is just an insane bar fighter who knows how to ice skate.
And again, this is also Richard's 13th season. Like, I didn't sit down and pick through his penalty minutes, but I think that in this phase of his career, he has been more penalized than he was at the beginning, which you could attribute to him, like, slowing down and being chippier. But I would also say, like, I wouldn't discount the possibility that as he got more head injuries, which he certainly did, more of this shit was happening and he had a harder time, but it's just so hard to know.
Yeah, he broke three sticks over a guy. Oh, I should point out here, we were wrong. Bertuzzi pled guilty to assault.
There you go.
And he got a plea bargain of 80 hours of community service, which is less community service than I got for setting a dumpster on fire.
There you go, kids. There's a lesson there.
Yeah. Break a guy's neck. Don't commit vandalism.
Yeah.
Assuming you're a rich man from Canada. That part is very important.
Very important. In addition to the on-ice behavior we've talked about, Richard had also previously drawn negative attention from the league president directly. In the early 1950s, he had a hockey column in a weekly local paper, which was apparently ghostwritten based on verbal interviews with him, and possibly that was being written by the Habs GM Frank Selke.
Wait, is this Frank Selke that the Selke trophy is named after?
I believe so, yeah.
Outstanding. Okay.
All the trophies were just named after owners, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Except true. For the Richard trophy, because it was 1999. They went, well, let's actually name it after accomplishments.
What an idea.
So this is just really funny to me that he got to have this newspaper article where he could talk shit about the league. It's really a wonderful old-timey, just like he's a poster, right?
Yeah, he's posting.
He's getting in trouble for his tweets. It's completely that.
Yeah, except like nowadays, if some athlete was doing that, he would get in a lot of trouble for like blaming things on the Jews or whatever the fuck else that like, whatever his name is, Aaron Rodgers is doing on Joe Rogan.
Well, you know what? I'm sure if we'd let Bobby Hull do it, but...
Oh. Yeah, or Wayne Gretzky for that matter. If Wayne Gretzky was playing nowadays, he would have 1,488 tweets per year.
Yep, this has been our obligatory fuck Wayne Gretzky of the episode.
Fucking piece of shit.
So Richard had stopped doing his column the previous season after being fined for going on a tirade against President Clarence Campbell, questioning the 8-game suspension giving out to his teammate Bernie Boom Boom Jeffrion, credited as the inventor of the slap shot, and pointing out the lack of suspensions for attacks on his teammates Jean Béliveau and Dollard Saint-Laurent, all French-Canadians. He called Campbell a dictator in the column and implied the league was giving Red Wings players like Gordie Howe paper assists to pad their stats.
Okay, nice. He just really wants that trophy, huh?
Yeah, for the he's saying like, yeah, how come these guys all have points? Like, okay, Howe and Ted Lindsay. Okay, I admit they're good players, but
yeah, because people like Gordie Howe and Ted Lindsay definitely need to pad their stats with fake assists.
Yeah, so for the just to kind of catch up, the non-hockey fans were still holding on. When someone scores a goal, we talked about the people who pass it to them get an assist, and especially that second assist, like. Nowadays, everything being on camera is like assists will get corrected constantly for who actually did it.
Oh, yeah. Same with goals as well.
Right. But back then, like you were just kind of trying to going from even in, beer league today, the ref is kind of guessing.
Yeah. It's kind of eye fucking a lot. Yeah.
Like it's not saying that this was happening, but for somebody to go, yeah, I'm going to throw Howe as having the second assist when he didn't, like it's not impossible, like physically.
Sure. Like for mistakes to be made, I'm sure they were all the time. But as far as some kind of concerted effort to pad these two guys' stats, famously two of the greatest Red Wings to ever play the game, doubtful, I say. Sus, yeah. Even.
Yeah.
Starting to feel like Richard has too much brain damage.
Yeah. Hearing the name, I'd always assumed Bernie Jeffrion was an Anglophone, but nope, he was born Joseph Bernard André Jeffrion, and when I checked to confirm the other players were, in fact, Joseph Jean-Arthur Béliveau and Joseph Dollard Irv Saint-Laurent. I finally actually looked this up and confirmed it's not just that this was widespread. It was the standard in Quebec at this time to christen all of your male children Joseph and all of your female children Marie, while generally just not actually using the name in practice.
That would be very confusing.
But it was like, it's just an honorific. Like, I you can probably make analogies to this in other cultures that have like more like long naming systems.
I guess. I mean, I know in Armenia we have patronyms. Like, I got a patronym when I got my citizenship.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't use it, really. Like, it doesn't become your first name.
Yeah.
It replaces my middle name, for example. I'd like to believe that I was bestowed the title of Joseph.
I think what happens here is it's essentially used as a pronoun because it's like...
Interesting.
Because nobody called them that, right? Nobody said anything but Jean Béliveau. Like, and nobody said anything but Maurice Richard, because it was essentially the practice to have the first like recorded name on the birth certificate be Joseph or Marie, and then the second name be an inherited name from like a father, godmother, or whatever. And then the third name was your name. Like, that was just the standard.
That's too many names.
Yeah. It's not a thing anymore, but it was back then.
Goddamn DEI got rid of all of our Josephs.
Yeah, that was the quiet revolution, the 60s DEI in Quebec.
Yeah.
So like I said, it's just extremely Catholic.
Yeah, I guess that French Catholics explains a lot.
Moving on. Between the severity of the incident and the pattern of behavior, Campbell eventually came down with the harshest discipline he would ever hand out in 3 decades in the role. The Rocket was suspended for the rest of the season, including all of the playoffs. And this, of course, kicked off a wave of everyone's favorite thing, discourse.
Oh no. I really hope Richard didn't get really into theory.
Oh boy. I actually want to compress a lot of that here, because the extent to which French Canadians face discrimination is something that we'll get into in greater detail with future episodes. But by the numbers, like, there's definitely economic disadvantages here. And within the context of the NHL, what kind of matters for the events that go down here is that was absolutely the perception of Richard and the Habs fans.
Mm.
People are saying very openly, we are being discriminated against as French Canadians.
Not the fact that this guy smashed 3 hockey sticks over a guy.
Yeah.
This is bigotry at its finest.
Yeah.
They weren't arresting anyone else smashing sticks over people's faces that day, but only this guy who did it 3 times.
Yeah. Roque Carrier, who, as I said, he's the writer of The Hockey Sweater. He also did this biography on Richard. And being more of a prose writer than a historian, his biography, I would say it's more prosaic than historical.
Mm.
So I tread lightly in using it as a factual source, but I want to use his words here because I think he's good at conveying the sense of mood. Quote, the province of Quebec is incredulous, end quote. He further writes, quote, people are no longer afraid of the bosses. They've lived through strikes in the factories, in the mines, in the textile mills. Now they will organize a strike against Clarence Campbell, who has always looked down on French Canadians. During the war, he sat in his neat and tidy office while French Canadians were fighting in the mud, end quote. And finally, quote, Clarence Campbell is trying to crush a little French Canadian who has wings. That's what people are saying. Anger is rumbling in the province of Quebec like the water held captive in the rivers by the winter ice, end quote.
This is lame as fuck. I'm sorry. This guy committed so many counts of assault on the ice. Like...
Yeah,
even concussion thing aside,
yeah,
so much assault. It's crazy how much assault he committed. You can't do that. Name one other place where you're allowed to smash someone upside the head 3 times with a weapon and get away with it by just losing your job for the rest of the year, and then you can come back.
Mm-hmm.
And what I assume as one of the highest paid players in the league.
I think so. Yeah.
Look. I'm not saying there wasn't bigotry against French Canadians in the NHL and many other aspects of Canadian life, but I just don't think this is one of them.
This is not the best example, but like the powder keg is there for a reason for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The groundwork has been laid by all the actual bigotry that has occurred.
Yes. Kind of touched on this, but back then there was not a Department of Player Safety like there is now with its own person running it. The league president is the league disciplinarian, right? Like today, this would be Gary Bettman just doing the direct discipline.
Somehow, every time he came down to discipline someone, he just fined the Phoenix Coyotes.
Outside of this current role, Campbell had long been involved in the disciplinary side of things. In his early career as an NHL referee, even he'd once been punched by a player, the excellently named Dit Clapper.
Fuck yes. Best name of the show so far.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I get my shit rocked by Dit Clapper.
Yep. Campbell also had a law degree and had been a Rhodes Scholar, which helped him in entering the Canadian Army as a second lieutenant. He left as a lieutenant colonel and, per the University of Alberta, quote, was involved in the prosecution of Kurt Meyer, a commander in the 12th SS Panzer Division charged with the murder of 41 Canadian prisoners of war, end quote.
Hmm.
So, he's been here before.
Yeah, he's just trotting old terror. I can't even shit at him because he used to be an officer. I mean, prosecuting a whole bunch of SS dudes gets a pass for me.
Yeah. And then this is another thing that only comes up in SB Nation's version. They say Campbell thought Richard was a coward for avoiding the war. Now, I didn't see a lot of that being affirmed in other places. Like, I couldn't find a quote from Campbell saying this. It would have been a weird thing to believe because, as we've said, he tried to enlist three fucking times.
Yeah, which leaves a paper trail, you know? Like, there's an ample paper trail showing that Richard tried to enlist. And every time he tried to enlist, he was riddled with hockey injuries because he was playing hockey in the 40s.
Yeah. So, grain of salt on that claim. One other major factor in Campbell's decision is exemplified by this quote attributed to him.
Fines never bothered Richard. For every $250 I fined him, Quebec businessmen would send him $1,000. Richard could do no wrong in Quebec. I was always the villain. Yeah, you're the league owner. Nobody likes the league owner.
Yeah, I like to believe that back then everyone was always booing Campbell whenever he showed up for anything.
Yeah.
Actually, that kind of will come up.
There you go. I mean, nobody likes the owner of any fucking sports league for a good reason. It's like any single person who becomes like a politician or a president. In order to get to that point, you kind of have to be a dick. Like to be like, only I can run this. Like you have to be a fucking asshole, you know?
Yeah. The suspension did not directly cause the riot, but there was an immediate backlash. Campbell received death threats. Like one was... Shit, I should have written this one down, but if someone's like, I'm an undertaker and Campbell should know that he's going to need me soon. Shit like that.
It just sounds like the undertaker cutting a promo on him.
Yes. Yeah, my favorite death threat, quote, I'm no crank, but I'm going to blow your place up, end quote.
Sweet to the point. Gotta respect it.
Jean Drapeau, the mayor of Montreal, criticized the suspension and it even came up in Parliament.
That's impressive. Like, I can't think of the last time I can think of something sports related becoming that big of a deal, like government wise, is like steroids in baseball.
Yeah.
Like, they got like a congressional hearing.
Unfortunately, we love to bring up hockey shit in Parliament. When we did our Don Cherry episodes originally, I think when I searched, because you can search the parliamentary database for like all the transcripts since 1994. And I think Don Cherry is mentioned in Parliament like 14 times since then.
I assume by only the finest Canadian elected members of Parliament.
Well, that, but also from Quebec politicians criticizing him for his xenophobic remarks toward French Canadians.
Yeah, I mean, name a group of people and Don Cherry hates them. The only people he doesn't hate are white Canadians that are not French.
Well, but except for the Pinkos and the left-wing kooks.
That also, yeah, true.
Jean Drapeau is a guy who's going to come up a bunch because he was the mayor of Montreal for a while. And I always just find this guy funny because sometimes when you just translate these French names literally, like his name is John Flagg.
Sounds like a supervillain.
Yeah, or just like a character in a right-wing novel. It's like John Flagg strapped on his ammunition.
That's true. Yeah, he sounds like the protagonist in a book that Ben Shapiro would write.
Yes, exactly. Outside of Quebec, reactions were often very different. The suspension drew supportive comments from Maple Leafs president Conn Smythe and had one of the Bruins forward saying Richard had it coming. Many others said it was the least Campbell could have done, including the president of the Bruins, the coach of the Red Wings, Jack Adams, who said he had expected a suspension to the end of the calendar year, and Red Wings star Ted Lindsay, who said Richard was lucky to not get banned for life. And yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I think so.
I mean, I'm trying not to be a bandwagon guy here by only backing things that like Red Wings players say, but like, yeah. I mean, going off of the current standards of conduct that we kind of grew up in professional sports, nobody's getting away with this shit for anything other than like a lifetime ban.
Yeah, or they'd still go soft, I think, but you would be out for a... I mean, Marty McSorley, I think, got like a year or something. So, and then he never played.
Yeah, but
again,
it was effectively a lifetime ban because no one ever brought him back.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like a gentleman's deal that we're not going to hire that guy again. But yeah. Todd Bertuzzi came back. So,
sure did. Another Boston player opined that the league should have thrown the book at Richard as early as 1947, referring to one of the earlier infamous incidents.
Yeah. He has something of a track record.
Part of why the threats to Campbell were so tangible was that he lived in Montreal and regularly attended games at the Forum as a season ticket holder.
Hey, you know, someone said they're going to blow you up. Like, maybe stay.
Yeah.
Well, don't stay at home because he says he's going to blow your house up. I don't know. Sell the league.
Yeah. Or maybe it was his office. But, and, you know, like people might think that's hyperbole, but this is just a few years away from the FLQ. So the dynamite threats are not empty.
Yeah, the dynamite's probably already somewhere in Quebec.
Yes.
They're just trying to find a cause.
One of the things Richard had accused Campbell of in the newspaper column was actively rooting for other teams during his appearances.
That's not surprising either. Sports back then were crooked as fuck, man.
I mean, it's not impossible that he did kind of hate French Canadians.
Yeah, he probably wasn't a huge fan of the Habs as like a baseline.
No. It's a self-perpetuating problem. Now, an appearance is what Clarence Campbell intended to make on March 17th, the day after the suspension was announced, as the Habs hosted the Red Wings. With three games left in the season, two of them were against Detroit, with whom they were neck in neck for first place. Despite one local newspaper publishing a cartoon with Campbell's bloody severed head on a platter, he went anyway.
Fuck yes.
I tried to find this cartoon. I could not find it. The best thing I could find was this like anti-Richard cartoon.
Sports journalists back then were so much cooler.
I wish I could write cartoons as my journalism.
Now sports journalists are all just kind of like work for the leagues that they report in, like the Adam Schefters of the world, or Schechters, whatever his name is. Yeah, back then, so much cooler. No, cut his head off. It's fun. we're in support of this.
It's understandable why he may not have feared the hockey fans. An author who wrote a book on his father serving under Campbell in World War II claims that the future NHL president, quote, was purposely exposed to mustard gas and learned how to fire a rolling artillery barrage, end quote, and also as the commander of the headquarters squadron of the 4th Canadian Armored Division in Normandy, quote, was fired at by snipers, caught in artillery barrages, and twice narrowly missed being killed by bombs from Allied planes, end quote.
I mean, a lot of those seem like a skill issue. Namely, purposefully being exposed to mustard gas. Was he just having doing that for funsies? That's the only one I want to learn more about.
Yeah, I'm not sure. As with always, I'm like, well, how good is this source of this guy who wrote this book? Was he doing good, like, history? I don't know, so.
Doing, like, 1915's alpha male grind set shit, where he's like, no, true alphas go outside and they huff the mustard gas. They don't use a mask.
Maybe, yeah. It just oddly, a lot of, despite having had all this service, there's not a lot written about his actual military service other than like the summary of this guy's book, which I didn't get into reading the actual book. So
that part doesn't really surprise me so much. I mean, despite the fact he was like a rich kind of upper crust dickhead, like back then it was generally considered in bad taste to kind of flaunt your military shit. Whereas today everybody gets a book deal to include myself. So
yeah. All right. When Campbell arrived at the Montreal Forum with 6 minutes already elapsed in the game and the Habs already down 2-0, the police had their hands full outside keeping a mob in check. Before he even reached his seat, the fans had already started pelting him with everything. Crumpled newspapers and game programs, peanuts, fruits and vegetable, eggs, including apparently at least one hard-boiled.
Nice.
What's described as a pickled pig's foot and even shoe coverings.
Fuck yeah. I have two questions.
Yeah.
Did they bring the pig's feet? Like, I am going to eat this in the stands? Or were they like, I'm going to throw this at someone. Oh, look, he's here.
People were definitely smuggling stuff into their jackets kind of thing because this was known in advance. Like, he said he was going to go to the game and people were like, we will fuck you up. And that's why there was a mob outside before the game started.
Right. And there was cops and everything probably trying to search people. I mean, this does happen to a much lesser degree nowadays, especially in like Red Wings games when the playoffs are coming up close.
Mm-hmm.
Security is very, very high, but they're not looking for weapons. They're looking for octopus that people are smuggling into the arena.
Yep. And we won't be explaining that for the non-hockey fans. You can just
nope.
Wonder.
even if we explained it, would not make sense. Just move on.
But Campbell and his secretary slash fiance held fast to their seats, even as people around them were hit by errant throws. And the people around them were like, can you guys move? We're getting hit by tomatoes. And they're like, no.
Someone brought potatoes. This shit fucking hurts.
Oh, you're going to love what one person smuggled in. The home team was down 4-1 at the end of the first period, which didn't help things. One man boldly walked right up to him and smashed his tomatoes directly into the league president's chest before being pulled away.
Fuck yeah.
That's so good. You can't do that anymore.
Gary Bettman should have to sit in the stands with everybody, so this happens all the time.
Yeah. Like, there's no press box. I mean, especially like the Forum, at the time, I guess, wasn't an old building, but just the way that building was designed is not the way that modern rinks are designed. Like, yeah, any celebrities, league president, whatever, you have, I think, a little like cordon on your section and you've like ushers standing around you, but people can walk up to you.
Hmm.
As including this other guy.
I mean, if you're a league president, you can go to a game and not get your fucking head splattered by like 19 different kinds of fruits and vegetables and boots and shit. Like, you know, you're running the league well. That's how it should be.
Even after all this, another man managed to talk his way past the ushers in order to offer to shake Campbell's hand. And Campbell apparently like is very tentative and like, okay, I guess you're a fan. I'll shake your hand. And then the man slapped him in the face twice.
I thought he was going to give him like the mall rat stink hand.
Oh, that'd be good too. So this photo is from the riot. It's unclear if this is either of those two people we mentioned. I couldn't find like a proper caption for it, but this is how accessible. That's Campbell in the hat there.
That rules.
Yeah.
I love that. Again, we've talked about it before. It's like pictures of hockey crowds back then looked like they absolutely were like photoshopped into the pictures. Everybody's in a suit and tie and like a fucking hat.
Yep.
Because merch didn't exist yet.
Yep.
Also, the seats for the league president look like they suck.
Yeah, no, it was very egalitarian time. Everybody had to sit in a dog shit uncomfortable seat.
I yearn to return, but only to that. Like, a billionaire couldn't leverage the local municipality to build a $600 million stadium and then, like, retreat to their Elysium box in the stands or whatever. You had to sit in the shitty, rickety movie theater seat with me in this place that fucking sucks.
Yeah. So again, there's conflicting versions. So some people say, like some people are saying, oh, the cops are too busy outside. You can see, I'm pretty sure these are cops in the picture.
Yeah, they definitely look like cops or very cop-like security.
Some people say that the assailant, the one who slapped him, was dragged away by cops. One version says he was dragged away by an ex-Red Wing with the extremely dope name of Jimmy Orlando.
With a name like Jimmy Orlando, you have two options in your career field. After you retire from your apparent career at the Detroit Red Wings, you become a mafia member or a porn star.
Yeah. I did double back for a quick check on this guy, so assuming everything in a series of poorly cited and mostly plagiarized write-ups is true, let me answer both of your questions. Yes, he was extremely mobbed up, not shocking if you know much about morale in this era. No, as far as I can tell, he was not a porn star, but he was a beard for famed burlesque pioneer Lily St. Cyr to cover up her affair with wrestling magnate Eddie Quinn when his wife was around. Fantastic. Now, again, this is just a minute after he gets slapped, more or less. This is, again, I want to clarify, this is the result of people smuggling shit in. That's when the tear gas went off.
Was that smuggled in too?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh man, I want to meet the guy who's like, oh yeah, I got like three tear gas canisters nestled between my balls and my leg. Nobody's decided to search there. And how big were tear gas canisters in the fucking 50s?
Probably not small. I mean, you've got a trench coat, I guess. Like, nobody's a pat down.
Everybody's wearing layers and has overcoats and shit back then. You could have brought in a Tommy gun if you wanted to.
Probably. Well, and I mean, how many of the people who are supposed to be checking you are probably like, oh yes, fuck Clarence Gamble, go right in. Like, they're also possibly mad, so.
This man looks like two tear gas canisters and a trench coat. Come on in, sir.
Yeah, so in the, I think it's the, what's probably the best source, which is Darcy Janish's book. I think that's the one where he describes it as like, well, he says that these guys come from an auto shop. So in my mind, I was like, oh, they probably homebrewed something. Maybe they know how to weld. I don't know. I'm not an expert on tear gas. In Rook Carrier's book, which I think is the least factual, but he describes it as this guy like asked his friend who was a cop, hey, can I grab a can of tear gas from your car? And the cop said yes. really want to believe that's real.
That probably is what happened. Like, I fully believe. I mean, it has a lot to do with, like, did cops even carry tear gas back then? I mean, obviously they weren't carrying it on their belt, like pepper spray or anything. But, like,
yeah,
it's the 50s. Cops are cops throughout time. Your drunk friend's like, hey, can I have that? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably more straightforward than, like, home brewing tear gas in this era. So, also, here's the picture of the tear gas.
Oh my God, that's a lot of tear gas.
Yeah. Just absolutely blanketing the stands there.
That's like European hooligan riot levels of tear gas in the stands.
At the auspicious time of 9:11 p.m., a device exploded about 8 meters from Campbell, sending the crowd to the exits. As we're told, the organist played a gentle ballad from the rafters.
It's playing Swan Lake.
Yeah, it's like a... No, it wasn't a French one. I don't know. I'll drop it in the edit.
The Swan Lake. It was the device, the tear gas?
Yes. Yes. Sorry. Yeah.
How bad is the security where someone managed to get large amounts of tear gas and a firing device within feet of this guy after someone explicitly said they were going to blow him up?
Yeah. Well, and it's not clear why it was. It's described like 8 meters, 25 feet, somewhere around that area. Again, the only person who goes into detail is Rook Carrier, and that makes me very suspicious. But his description is that this guy was trying to get to Campbell and it went off prematurely. Maybe? Because, like, why else would you do it that? He
accidentally suicide bombed him with tear gas.
Yeah.
Going to the great French paradise of the sky. You can cheat on your spouse as much as you want up there.
At this stage, the municipal fire chief ordered the game to be stopped, the building evacuated. So the league eventually just awards the contest to the Detroit Red Wings by default, which, fair enough.
The Detroit Red Wings winning a game via riot is pretty on brand for Detroit.
Yeah. The ensuing riot went a lot like you'd expect. Many of the crowd leaving the game joined the swarm of thousands who were outside, smashing the windows of the Forum and of nearby businesses down a 15-block stretch of St. Catherine Street. They looted stores, overturned automobiles, damaged streetcars, and assaulted bystanders.
Why does that guy have, like, fucking...
the cowboy hat?
Yeah, there's just a random cowboy in the street in a riot.
Well, this is 1955, so he might be a time-traveling Marty McFly or something, because he's got this, like...
the jacket.
You know, it looks like he's got his hat from 1885, his jacket from 2015, maybe his pants from 1985. Like, he's got to be a time traveler, right?
Yeah, he's wearing his Hypebeast streetwear, and he's used it to go back in time to fight in a French-Canadian hockey riot.
Oh, boy. The chaos began to wind down around 1 a.m., 4 hours after it began, and was dispersed by 3 o'clock, taking a toll of 12 injured cops, 25 injured civilians, and as much as $100,000 worth of damage in 1955 terms. So about over a million Canadian today.
I'm only disappointed there wasn't more injured cops.
Yeah, well, do better next time, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a next time in Vancouver, to be fair.
Yeah.
Both of them ending with the Canadian team losing and them getting really, really mad and fucking up their own city.
But at least Vancouver was in the playoffs, like,
at least they made it to the finals.
Yeah,
they get that going for them. They lost, though, because they're Vancouver and they deserve it.
Well, and because Canada's cursed, but that's
right.
Whole other conversation.
You can thank Patrick Waugh for that.
Yeah. Very different accounts on how many people were arrested. The CBC said 137. That's the highest number I saw. In the aftermath, the mayor again blamed Campbell, and one city councilor announced he wanted a warrant for the arrest of the league president for provoking the riot.
Oh, fuck yeah. I love the doubling down. Like, yeah, we busted up our own stadium, our own city. We injured like a dozen cops, but it's this guy's fault for showing up. We don't fucking like him. If we're in the same room as him, it's like if you quarter a dog, we just have to start punching each other.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, obviously nothing ever came of that, but that's a really funny threat.
It would be really cool if the league president could never come to a home game in your area, otherwise the cops would roll him up.
Where he lives.
Yeah. I had to be exiled from Quebec due to a outstanding warrant for being an asshole.
So Le Devoir, and just as a refresher, that was that like French-Canadian nationalist newspaper. They ran an article 4 days after the riot, which the English, the title translates to, "They have killed my brother Richard," a reference to the Declaration.
It's a bit much.
Yeah. A reference to the Declaration, "They have killed my brother Riel." For those unaware, Louis Riel was a Métis French-Canadian hung by the Canadian government for treason in 1885.
Look, I know what you're trying to do there, guys. It's a bit much. He was suspended for a couple hockey games. I don't think he was a great, like, FLQ freedom fighter that got strung up.
No. And, like, and Richard made a point of trying to be very, like, apolitical for whatever that's worth. Like, he would always, like, dodge any kind of political questions, other than when he would directly accuse the League president of discriminating against French Canadians.
Yeah. Now, if you'll see my article that I ghostwrite with this other guy, I think he's a prick. I don't think he's a prick in a nationalist way. Just in a man-to-man way. I don't like him.
Yeah. Ghostwritten possibly with the league, with the team's GM, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking amazing. No, I hate him for non-political, non-nationalist reasons. Yeah. I need to make that clear.
So again, this is like the real firebrand French-Canadian nationalist newspaper, and this is how that article opens.
"French-Canadian nationalism appears to have taken refuge in hockey. The crowds that vented their anger last Thursday night were not motivated solely by the passions of sport or the sentiment of an injustice committed against an idol. It was a frustrated people who protested against fate. Fate, this Thursday, was called Mr. Campbell, but he was the incarnation of all the adversaries, real or imagined, of this small people."
Incredible.
Sure. It's kind of like what we talked about. Like, it was just another thing of, like, it was... people saw it as bigotry because they had been the victim of so much of it already, right? Like,
yes.
Because why else would they believe it? Unless they have, like, you know, the 2025 American conservative brain where everything is hurting them. I mean, the French-Canadian people had really been shit on by the Canadian government. And, like, why wouldn't they believe that would spread into sports?
Yeah.
Even if there was... I mean, because it's not like, again, like we said, it's not like they could watch on TV as Richard brained people with hockey sticks. And even if they did, I mean, they'd probably be like, yeah, fuck them. They deserved it.
Right. Like, there's no, I don't have a reason to explicitly doubt that to some extent, even on the ice, like between the league and the referees, there was xenophobia and discrimination. It's just a terrible example, like in this particular instance.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the comparison is wild. Like, I don't doubt that there's plenty of that shit, but comparing him to Louis Riel is rich.
Yeah.
Very funny.
On the hockey front, the Rocket, as you may have gathered, did not hold on to the scoring lead, but in a twist of fate, the only two players close to him were his teammates. 2 days after the riot, the second last game of the regular season and the final one at home, the New York Rangers came to town with Campbell wisely staying away from the Forum this time.
What a pussy.
Yeah.
Get up in there. Have someone set another bomb off near you.
Well, and he wouldn't even say, "I'm not going to come." He said, "I will defer to the arena, like to the Forum, the owners, what they
and
want."
Nobody's going to be like, "Yes, sir, please come. We really want to deal with $1 million in damage."
Yeah. Well, it's already broken. The stores are already, the windows are already broken. What else are they going to do?
Steal the plywood. I don't know.
Bernie Geoffrion put up a goal and two assists for the Habs in a 4-2 win, putting him one single assist above Richard in the scoring race, causing the Montreal fans to jeer and boo him.
Yeah, that would make you really unpopular. I mean, I'm sure he was thinking about it during the game as well.
Yeah.
Because he is your teammate and everybody knows how much he wants this title.
It's hard to find the specifics because, again, the most specific person here is Roque Carrier, who I don't explicitly trust. But he's saying that they were booing him into the next season.
Oh, hell yeah. I love a petty sports fan.
Yeah.
I imagine how Richard felt, how that locker room felt after that.
And we do have this quote for sure. Reflecting on this later, Boom Boom would say, quote, "I can assure you that I had more heartbreak in winning the trophy than Richard had in missing it," end quote.
Imagine winning a trophy and getting heckled by your own fans.
Yeah.
For months. That has to suck.
It's like when you see a picture of, the most famous example is Jean-Sébastien Jaguar when he wins the Conn Smythe trophy for valuable player in the playoffs, on a team that's lost. So he's holding the trophy and he's sad. I'm imagining that with Geoffrion, where he's holding like the Art Ross and he's really sad about it. Like, I wanted this to go to my boy Maurice.
Man, poor Jaguar. That guy, yeah. He 100% deserved the Conn Smythe. because he played incredibly. But I can't remember how many people have won the Conn Smythe while being on the losing team in the Stanley Cup. It's been very, very few people. And he's just skating around looking so fucking pissed.
Yeah, I actually learned about this. So I, for unrelated reasons, someone linked to Reggie Leach, who is an Indigenous guy. And he was the only player, because all of the other Conn Smythe winning losers were, like Ron Hextall was one, Jaguar was one. They were all goalies.
That does make sense as well.
Except for Reggie Leach. And then I learned, so I was watching this game in June and I did not realize because like as soon as the Panthers won, I, you know, stopped watching the game in disgust. I did not sit around to watch them parade around with the Stanley Cup. And I only learned like 2 days ago that Connor McDavid won the Conn Smythe on the losing team. I was like, oh good for him.
That must suck for him too, because he's supposed to be like the next one, so to say. Like for people like, you know, Wayne Gretzky was the great one, and the next one is always supposed to be like the next Wayne Gretzky. Arguably the next one before him was probably Crosby, but then now he's the next one. And it's just like, he's been on a lot of shitty Oiler teams, and for the first fucking time he gets to the Stanley Cup Finals and he gets to get the Conn Smythe, the losing side. Fuck.
Yeah. Well, that's all true, but I think we should not lose sight of the most aggrieved party in that, which is me personally.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I would have rather see the Red Wings win, but you know, who am I to say? We've won plenty. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why we've fucking blow now, but like, I've seen us win so many Stanley Cups to be alive. I don't feel like I have room to complain.
That's right.
Like, maybe when I'm like 45, I'm allowed to start bitching again, you know?
I'm sure they'll be good again. But speaking of which, as for the team, the Red Wings trounced the Habs 6-0 in the season-ending rematch, cementing first place and home ice advantage in the playoffs for themselves. Montreal opened the playoffs against Boston, winning in 5 games, and before the deciding game at home on March 31st, they held a small ceremony to honor their 2 leading scorers, like their number 1 and 2 scorers, Geoffrion and Richard. So Richard was there.
Richard got a participation trophy while suspended.
Yes. So this was his first public appearance, or at least his first appearance at the Forum since the riot. And again, the riot was against the Red Wings, but the incident where he gets suspended is against the Bruins. And the Bruins are visiting as they're honoring these two guys with a pregame ceremony. So Hal Lako, who was that Bruins defenseman who Richard had so violently gone after back on the 13th, he refused to be involved in any kind of pregame ceremony, right? He's pulling the Owen Nolan here.
Yeah, he got brained 3 times.
Yeah. So he's like, I'm not going to take the ice as a starter. So somebody else has to go stand on the blue line for this like fanfare before the game. For whatever reason, the person that the Bruins coach sent out for the starting lineup was a career minor leaguer, an absolute nobody who was called up as an injury substitute and would never play in the NHL again after the team was sent packing for the offseason. That's right. It was none other than friend of the pod, Don Cherry.
No shit.
Yeah.
I had no idea that Don Cherry was a career minor leaguer.
Yeah, he played like 16 years in the AHL.
The way he talks, I always assumed he had some kind of NHL career.
1 game. This game.
He only got onto the ice because some other dude's like, nah, fuck that guy. I'm not going out there.
Yeah.
And that makes me hate Don Cherry even more.
Yeah.
Fucking piece of shit.
So the Habs moved on to meet who else? The Red Wings in the Stanley Cup Final, with Detroit taking the championship in 7 games.
As it should be.
And like Detroit, Howe even says as an autobiography or a biography or something. Later, he is actually asked about it. And he's like, oh, I'm pretty sure we would have won even if Richard was there. It's like, well, you have to say that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad team. It has Gordie Howe and Ted Lindsay on it. I believe Terry Sawchuk back then as well. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a solid fucking team.
Yeah. But back on the night of the riot, Maurice Richard himself had also been in attendance, sitting next to the goal judge behind the net, which is the same end of the rink as Clarence Campbell. Apparently, he was just kind of not really he was not noticed in plain clothes, or nobody was making a fuss about him. He had privately commented to someone next to him just before this tear gas went off, like, this is a disgrace, in reference to everything going on, because they're all like, the fans are, you know, still going nuts already. Richard was initially reluctant to comment publicly because he's afraid of just any public appearance will inflame the fans. But the next day, he finally gets convinced to address the fans on the radio and TV to plead for calm, speaking in French, then English.
Because I always try so hard to win and had my troubles in Boston, I was suspended. At playoff time, it hurts not to be in the game with the boys. However,
I want to do what is good for the people of Montreal and the team, so no further harm will be done. I would like to ask everyone to get behind the team and help the boys win from the Rangers in Detroit. I will take my punishment and come back next year to help the club and younger players to win the cup. I love that he had to call like a ceasefire.
Yeah.
Like if he's like a terrorist cell leader.
And it was very good of you not to do a reductive accent when reading that.
I couldn't even attempt a French Canadian accent. Yeah. Sure. I'm not good at accents. For that, you're going to have to get Nate or Tom on the show.
And fair enough to him, he is doing the reasonable thing in the situation where he's saying, like, please don't riot, support the team, I will come back, we're going to go win the cup.
Yeah, the Habs have announced a unilateral ceasefire against the government of the NHL.
Mm-hmm. A man of his word, Bouchard came back the next season, joined for the first time by Henri, his brother 15 years his junior, then immediately led the Habs to an unparalleled 5 straight Stanley Cup championships before retiring right after. The end.
And it's still the record, right?
Yeah. I mean,
one will ever break that.
You can't, again, 6-team league, but still a good run, a good comeback, I would say.
Yeah. And if anybody was going to break the 5 cups in a row, it would have been back before the salary cap, and it would have been Detroit because the Ilitch family loved to make it fucking rain. It would have either been Detroit or Colorado because both owners were absolutely insane and were willing to spend $1 billion on payroll.
Yeah. That's a problem. They had to go through each other. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Little postscript. One of Richard's last public appearances was in 1996 at the final game played at the Forum in Montreal, the building the Habs had called home for 70 years while they won 22 of their 24 Stanley Cups. A couple of years after this arena change, the Rocket was diagnosed with cancer and passed away in 2000 at the age of 78, and no Canadian team would ever win the Stanley Cup again. This is probably all a coincidence and nothing to do with ghosts.
Wait, is that where the curse comes from? I thought the curse is the Patrick Waugh thing about, like, he was playing for the Habs and, Detroit absolutely shelled him. The coach kept him in as, like, a learning opportunity or whatever, like, put him in his place by the face, fucking Patrick Waugh.
Yeah.
And Patrick Waugh demanded a trade and got sent to the Avalanche. And I thought that's where the curse came from.
I mean, it's both, but people would say that, like, the Habs were helped by what they call the ghosts of the Forum. And one of the reasons for that was that Howie Morenz's funeral was held in the Forum because he died from an infection from an on-ice injury.
Mm.
I think people have said that, like, Raw cursed the team. I mean, I'm saying that closing that arena probably cursed the country. I don't know how else to explain it, but...
Yeah, I mean, I hold the fact that, I mean, the Habs made the jump from the Forum to where they play now. I don't know what it's called.
It's named after a shitty company that doesn't deserve our mention, so.
Of course it is. And the Red Wings went from Joe Louis Arena to fucking Little Caesars Arena. And while we sucked before we made the move, I fully believe that we are doomed to suck because we went from the last hockey-specific stadium not named after a corporation,
mm-hmm.
to the one named after the company that's owned by the owners of the Red Wings.
Yep.
And it's just like, no, we deserve to suck. We deserve it. Fuck us.
And total missed opportunity to call it Little Caesars Palace, which would have been funny.
And I mean, there was the Palace of Auburn Hills where the Detroit Pistons used to play. Now they also play at the Little Caesars Arena. It's a dual use one. There are so many cool names they could have picked because the Ilitches very easily could have just decided to name after something else rather than give themselves the naming rights for their other company. Like any fucking athlete from Detroit, fucking Gordie Howe, for example. No, let's name it after our own shitty fucking pizza place. And for people who aren't from the Midwest and don't know what Little Caesars is, it is a fucking a shit ass pizza that you only get if you're fucking plastered drunk or high as hell because it costs $5. It's a shit pizza. It's horrible.
Or if you're me and you're kind of a sucker for it and you want the crazy bread, so.
Look, I'll give you that. The crazy bread is good. But the only reason I'll ever eat Little Caesars, I've been back to Detroit. I mean, I don't go back that often, to be completely honest. Ever since I moved to Armenia and especially now that I moved to the Netherlands because I don't want to go back. But whenever I go back, I don't eat Little Caesars. I don't miss it. Jets is the better pizza. Fuck Little Caesars.
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, it's also gotten worse and gotten unshittified along with so many other fast food places.
Yeah. Now it's like a microwavable dough with some fucking tomato coloring on top.
Yeah, like even me, the nasty piggy who enjoyed Little Caesars, the last few I've had, I'm like, what the fuck happened? Like, it got worse.
Look, everybody enjoys kind of like a greasy, nasty pizza from time to time. And there was a time Little Caesars was perfectly fine at that, and it beat all of its competitors because, again, you got a large pizza for $5. Now it's not even worth that.
No. And yeah, this video is pretty cool. You can actually watch them. So this, at this point, most of the people who were there for this last game at the Forum were not even old enough to have seen Richard play, and it gets described as an 11-minute standing ovation, but you can watch the video. It's like 7 minutes long, but it's a fucking long standing ovation, and the crowd won't stop cheering. It's pretty cool. And you can also see how fucking outdated the 70-year-old building is, because the players, yeah, like, there's no glass behind them, and then the fans can like high-five them, basically.
That's so unsafe.
It's not even the fans, because I think that is where the team owners sit, because when that famous incident you're talking about where Patrick Roy gets kept in for like 9 goals and finally gets pulled, and he leans over into the crowd behind the player's bench to tell the owner, Mario Tremblay, he's never playing for the Habs again, and yeah, then storms off. Yeah, so you can see that structure still in this video. Pretty neat.
Even the ice looks weird, because this is, you said this is like in the 2000s?
This is 96. That's when.
Okay, so that does make a little bit more sense. Like the ice would still look kind of cloudy like that in the 90s. But like, that's an old ass building, man. Like Joe Louis definitely was showing its age. Mm-hmm. I went to Joe Louis Arena quite a few times. Look, it could have been fixed. Joe Louis could have had its life extended, but yeah, it was old as fuck. And the Forum was older. I need to point that out.
Yeah. It was built in 1924 and they started playing there in 1926. So old. And it's still up. It's been turned into other stuff, but.
Oh, that's awesome. Joe Louis got fucking bulldozed immediately.
Oh.
That shit's gone.
Yeah. Their building and Maple Leaf Gardens have been turned into like museums.
That would
have
been a much better use of those spaces.
Like I said, Maurice Richard, he dies of cancer not that long after. He dies in 2000. He was the first non-politician granted a state funeral by the province of Quebec.
Oh, that rules.
I don't know if it's happened since then. They've had big hockey funerals, like Jean Béliveau's funeral was a big deal. I don't know if it was a state funeral. I found that hard to find out.
Obviously, no American player will ever get like a state funeral because we don't care about hockey that much. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like Michigan would have a state funeral for like Steve Yzerman when he dies.
Maybe, yeah. For people who have sat through the series, like that was the reason I wanted to build up all the historical context to understand like how intrinsically tied the story is, not to just to being a riot, but all of this culture and that like sense of cultural isolation and like all these things completely fuel how passionate these people are, even when this guy is 78 or he's like 75, I think, here, and they're going apeshit for him because he's like a superhero.
Yeah, it's I don't think it's something that modern sports fans, I include myself on that, obviously, can really comprehend. We just grew up in a different time. Mm-hmm. I mean, Detroit had quite a few stars that I would say this state would, like, you know, Steve Yzerman, of course, comes to mind, where he is beloved to the point he can do no wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to even compare, you know?
Well, and there's an extra level of it. Steve Yzerman, a Canadian. Richard was from Montreal. Like, he is a local boy. He's huge. And yeah.
Yeah, like we don't really have that, especially not in the U.S. and on hockey. I mean, you know, Detroit Red Wings now have a weird amount of people from Michigan on the team, weirdly enough, to include the captain, Dylan Larkin. But like, no one's gonna be able to compare to this. Like, not even close.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the opposite has happened to Montreal, where they went from initially being a team of French Canadians to like a blended team of like, who still had a lot of French Canadians, to they had a streak of at least dressing one French Canadian in their lineup like every day since their inception in 1909 to, I think, 2023. They finally played a game without a French Canadian player. To be exact, this streak of the team dressing at least one player born in the province of Quebec lasted from January 4th, 1910 to May 10th, 2021. A period of over 111 years.
Oh, man, that must have been such a sweet program for, like, a French-Canadian guy to get on an NHL roster.
Yeah, that's what was happening. And people, like, understandably, they get to the point of critiquing the team to say, like, you can't put this bubble player on the fourth line or the third line just because they're French-Canadian, like, because we're losing. So.
Yeah, just suit a backup goalie.
Yeah.
Like, that's the best bet.
Well, and it's the same deal with their coaches. They still only hire French-speaking coaches. And it's like, well, is Claude Julien good enough again?
Yeah. That's gonna dwindle and dwindle and dwindle, you know?
Unless that's changed. I have not, again, I've been way more off of hockey in the last like 4 years.
I mean, being a Detroit fan these days means I miss half the season, so.
So that really feels like that should be the end of the story, but there is a slight wrinkle. In the 2010s, the NHL underwent a massive audit of its own statistics and record books. They spent 6 years going over their archives, correcting over 6,000 bits of information that had been erroneously registered between 1917 and 1987. For example, a point on a paper score sheet being incorrectly transcribed over to the league's ledgers. Because they'd archived all of this stuff and saved it.
Yeah, yeah.
In one very specific example, an assist that was copied over as a point for Emile Bouchard was actually supposed to go to Maurice Richard. And so the league dutifully updated their stats across the board, finally crediting Maurice the Rocket Richard with one single additional point in the standings that season. And that season was 1945-1946. It had absolutely no bearing on anything meaningful. But can you imagine how crazy... If he had won.
Yeah, he would have tied his own teammate, maybe.
Yeah.
Still wouldn't have won.
But what if they'd found two?
No, that's true. And what if Detroit really was padding its stats?
Yeah, yeah. They have to take away all of Howe's points or his paper assists. So, Joe, we do a thing on this show called 6 Degrees of Strombo, and that's where we demonstrate that all Canadian culture and history runs through one individual, and that is former Much Music video jockey George Strombolopoulos. And I guess I should have written brief host of Hockey Night in Canada, George Strombolopoulos.
Powerful Greek name, I have to say.
But this is why it gets shortened to Strombo.
Fair enough.
This one is pretty straightforward. Maurice Richard, who rarely took the time to be interviewed, especially in English, was willing to go on TV in 1983 and talk about, among other things, the riot. This was on a little show called Grapevine, hosted, of course, by friend of the pod, Don Cherry.
Ugh.
Cherry, as our audience may already know, was willing to go on TV in 2012 and talk about, among other things, his love of the electronic music artist Deadmau5. This was on a little show. Yeah, he says he likes Deadmau5. This was on a little show called George Strombolopoulos Tonight, hosted, of course, by friend of the pod, George Strombolopoulos.
I'm actually like kind of surprised that Don Cherry could like temper back his seething bigotry to not hate Richard.
Yeah, he's very friendly to Richard. He,
I guess he transcended the hate barrier by just being too good.
Well, and for being like an aggressive thug, which Don Cherry loves.
Yeah, that probably helped. Yeah, it's like, I'm willing to overlook the fact that you're Quebecois and therefore I hate you. Because you're a lunatic.
Yeah.
Because you're a violent felon on ice skates.
Yeah, Don Cherry's discrimination has intersectionality. It has layers and all that.
It's very inclusive in his hatred.
Well, and that was the thought that I had in my mind. We were talking about the beginning of like, you know, the return guys, the old-time hockey guys, of which Don Cherry was a very outspoken one. Mm-hmm. And they would always say, well, back then the game had an honor code and, you know, you were more respectful of your opponent's face when he didn't have a helmet or a visor. And, you know, everything was always squared out and like people had respect for each other. And like, no, they didn't. Look at what they did to each other. They were swinging sticks at each other's heads fucking constantly.
Way more than they do now, should I add. You don't see that very often, if ever.
Yeah, it was so much worse. People were not being kept in check. And the same argument with like the player safety, like, oh, the league can't call these penalties, do these suspensions, like should be sorted out on the ice. Like, this is what happens when you sort it out on the ice.
I mean, they fucking suck at it, but it's still better. I will say, like, you know, people get headshotted so infrequently now and like so openly and on purpose that we remember the grievous case of McSorley and Brashear for a reason. Yeah. Whereas if, you know, we were in the 40s and 50s watching hockey and like, oh yeah, like four people got knocked the fuck out via stick sword fighting again.
Oh yeah. Like there were so many examples just in researching this where it's like, oh, another one took a swing at somebody. I think I brought up Sprague Cleghorn and what a psycho he was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but yeah, that is the long, long, circuitous story of the Richard riot. How do you feel about, I don't know, all of it?
I like the player safety board a lot more now. I hate Don Cherry more, which I didn't know was possible. Fucking hate that guy.
Looking into almost any of this in detail will do that for you. Because when I started, the reason this podcast pivoted in content to what all the stuff we're talking about was because I fell into this Don Cherry hole and wanted to explain it to some Australians. When I started that idea, I remembered him as this kind of weird, vaguely racist grandpa who just kind of said inappropriate stuff on TV and was kind of funny and occasionally correct. And then when I started cracking into it and like fact-checking him and doing all of the stuff I do to research things, I'm like, this fucking guy, like it turned my opinion of like, oh no, he actively sucks on every... Anyway, I'm repeating myself, but...
I hate to fall into the Don Cherry hole.
Yep. So that's it. That's all I got. Joe, thank you so much for coming and going on this long, winding journey through the regular season and playoffs, as it were.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
I know you need the bump from our fan base here, so do you want to plug your shit?
Yeah, I'm the host of the Lines Up by Donkeys podcast. We talk about military history, history in general, and the weird little guys of military history.
Yep, and I am the host of this podcast. Links to everything are in the description. There's Blue Sky, Instagram, Patreon, Discord. You can find us on YouTube and everywhere else you find podcasts under Canuck is a Slur. Not something I take for granted because you could not find us under the old name. And of course, supporting the show on Patreon means I can keep doing it on a weekly basis and I won't have to go to the foot-licking factory and get tear-gassed.
Hate to get tear gas at the foot licking factory.
I'm always getting tear gas at the foot licking factory. I don't know. That's how I feel in normal jobs. So until next time, get behind the team and help the boys win, you know? Canuck is a Slur is an independent collaborative effort to present a critical, progressive perspective on Canadian history and culture. Drop them. To make consistent, high quality content, we need your support. Let's tangle. Head on over to patreon.com/canuckisaslur to sign up. Beauty. If you're still on the fence, well, here's the sales pitch. Patrons at the good old Canadian boy level unlock expanded access to our Discord server, including sneak peeks at upcoming episodes. Let's go! Patrons at the good old Ontario boy level will also get into our archive of bonus content, which includes an extra episode every month. Patrons at the good old Kingston boy level get to commission a free piece of bad art every month as well, in addition to further special Discord privileges. Oh, how she loves the Stanley Cup. Hockey man is what I am. Let's go. Listen to what I say. Play that game the Canadian way. Hockey man is what I am. Let's go. We'd love for you to come and follow us on our various socials, which you can find linked in the episode description. You can also see any further links for our guests and co-hosts there as well. The creators of this work would like to acknowledge the Indigenous peoples across the continent that had their homes stolen, land broken up by arbitrary borders, cultures suppressed, languages banned, children kidnapped, and who were subjected to many other forms of colonial violence. We also acknowledge the many treaties broken and still unceded territories across Turtle Island. Thanks for listening, eat the rich, and happy trails to you.